What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of What's Next with Jess. I'm Jesse Rivera, and this is the podcast. Today on the podcast, we've got this one took a long time to actually make happen, and it shouldn't have taken this long, but I finally got Russell Cummings on the podcast today. And I knew this guy was multi-talented, but I had no idea the layers of talent that this man possesses. And it's a great conversation. I can't wait for you guys to listen to it, but I am going to make you wait a couple of minutes while I just go over a couple of things. Let's see, what do I got? I already talked about Russell Cummings. Well, we're going to talk a lot here in about a couple of minutes. This is a spring break for a lot of people. Not for me, but I'm working. But I am going to see Bruce Springsteen twice this week. Fucking stoked about that. I'm going to see him on Thursday night, and I'm going to see him on Sunday night. Super excited. Both of the shows are at the Chase Center in San Francisco, about an hour and a half away, give or take, depending on traffic. Not that far at all. I cannot wait. I have shitty seats for both shows. I'm just in the building. I don't care. I've been watching the set list, and he's been dropping some jewels. Tour debut of Bobby Jean last night in San Diego. Also tour debut of you guys don't care. Anyway, enough about Bruce Springsteen. I'm gonna see him twice, and I'm sure I'm gonna talk about it on the podcast for weeks and weeks and weeks. So bleh. Anyway, what else we got? Let me go over some dates. Let me see. Next week, April 3rd, Callback Bar, Johnny Taylor and Friends. I believe Josh Means, Holly James, Heather Rogue, and maybe one or two other comics are on that one. Gonna be a great time. 412, second Fridays over at Fox and Goose. I'm hosting this week. Taylor Evans headlines, Scott Powers features, Tanner Tuttle and Audacious. That's Penelope. Tanner Tuttle and Audacious are also on that bill. 420, the return of the Dope Room. The Dope Room is back with a dope lineup. Emma Haney, Holly James, Johnny Taylor. What more do you want? 426, I'm closing out River Rock Brewery in Galt. It's a Wes Hoffman production. Sarah Ellsworth is on the bill. I don't know who else. Let's see. 5-1 will be the... So the storytelling class starts again next week on 4-2. That's on Tuesday. But the grad show for the next storytelling class, and I heard that the storytelling class has some great comics in it this time around. The grad show for the storytelling show will be on 5-1, also at the Callback Bar, and then on 5-5 at the Callback Bar, Sabor a Mi. Buy some tickets, please. I'm starting to stress out about this, but I mean, that comes along with producing shows, man. It's like, is anybody going to show up, right? And like, you think no one's going to show up, and then the night of the show, boom, fucking packed house. But if you could buy tickets beforehand, the link is in my bio. Also, if you don't know how to use Google, you could probably Google Sabor a Mi, Sacramento Callback Bar, and I'm sure you'll find a link. Make sure you go to the real link. Don't be going to these third party sites and asking me why my tickets are $60, because that means that you are on the wrong site. What else is going on, dude? I watched Dune 2, great movie. It was a lot of fun. And what else have I watched? I don't think I've watched anything else. I just spend a lot of time watching YouTube videos about records, vinyl. Oh, I did pick up a killer vinyl the other day. I found a, it was really cool. It was a David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust album, but it was a library edition. Like, it used to belong to a public library, and on the back it still has all the stamps of where people were checking this out from the Seattle, a public library in Seattle, back in 1974. Crazy, man. So crazy. These things are like ancient relics, artifacts of a forgotten time. Album sounded great. Spun it a bunch of times. Finally took it off my turntable this morning, and I was listening to REM just now, and then I remembered, hey, I better record that podcast intro. So that's all I've got for today. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Mr. Russell Cummings. He is a Sacramento comic, but he does a lot more than just stand-up. enjoy the conversation. Thanks. Bye.
Ooh, you made me even in louder and deeper.
Okay. Yeah. You good? You good? All right.
Oh, that's fine.
Russell Cummings, how the hell are you, my friend?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling great. It's my season. It's my birthday. It's like in a couple of days. You know, it's sunny outside. The birds are chirping. Uh-huh. I'm feeling good.
My first memory of you, and it's a great one. Mars Parker was still running High Water on Wednesday nights, or yeah, a wet Wednesday.
Yeah.
And I was still very new. Maybe I was like 6 or 7 months in, but I went to High Water, and the first thing that happens is Mars is like, "Hey man, I hear good stuff about you. I'm gonna put you in between two good comics, so you cannot fail tonight." That was the first thing he told me, and I was like, "Thank you." And I came off stage. I had a killer set. Mars comes up to me, puts his arm around me, says, "Anytime you want to go up, you're going up." And then I get to the back of the room, and you come to me, and you give me your card, and you're like, "Hit me up. I want to book you." You never did, but I don't care. But it's still the fact that this guy, who I later go on to find out, oh my gosh, he's in the scene. Do you remember that night? Probably not.
Yeah, no. I do. You know what? You know what's funny is like those rooms that Mars did at High Water. Those are some of the first times I went out and did open mics in Sacramento.
Uh-huh.
We were talking a little bit before this. I when I started, I never did mics in Sacramento. When I started comedy specifically, I started in SoCal when I was living out there for a little bit.
Oh shit.
And so when I came back, I would do shows, but I would never do mics, and I would want to kind of get out. So no, I definitely remember what you're talking about. I definitely remember the show that you're talking about too. That show, my shows sometimes, you know, will go for, you know, 6 or so months. Uh-huh. And then we'll do another season, but I gotta get you out. I remember that you killed it and I like your style.
Thank you. Yeah. But that's also one thing I noticed about you right away is like, and I've always said that about like, because like growing up, like I didn't grow up doing comedy, but growing up, like I would go out and clubs have a season, like clubs have a lifespan. Like a hot club will be hot for a mm-hmm. little while, and that doesn't that kind of go the same for like a room? Because like I remember you were doing it up the street. What was like the Elephant Room, or what'd you call that one?
Yeah, we were doing Elephant on the Block. So
yeah, on the Block.
I mean, so to keep it funky with you, so really what happens a lot of times is I will have a season where, like, you know, in just now in the wintertime, I wasn't out as much. Like, I still get booked because people may know who I am, but I may not be posting on Facebook, being as funny, and, you know, may not be going outside to as many events. So it's out of sight, out of mind kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I will hibernate usually during those months. Okay,
so you do lay low.
I do lay low, and just to not burn out, right?
Yeah.
And then producing is a different beast. I like performing more than I like producing, but I'm good at producing, so I'm bringing back a show. But it takes so much more, you know, especially if you're doing it monthly. So I like to do that for like 6 months and then get out of the way. And to be really candid, sometimes these venues, like, it, you know, the relationship sours in different ways.
Yeah.
So each venue you see that I, you know, stopped dealing with, there was a reason for that, whatever it was.
That's so refreshing to hear, because I remember, like, when I was brand new and Johnny Taylor told me, he's like, start producing your own shows and book yourself, right? Or at mm-hmm. least host your own shows, because that's where you get the stage time. Instead of going around and trying to get stage time, just give yourself the stage time, right? But man, producing a monthly show is a fucking tear. It's like, it's a grind, and it really wears on you. And I didn't like it at all. Like, a lot of moving pieces, right? And it's like so many people to work with, and like not only like booking the lineup, but booking the right lineup. Because I see so many shows that are just like five dudes, you know, and there's mm-hmm. no like, there's like one like there's like one like pun comic and like one dirty comic, and like it doesn't flow, like, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Is that's something you try to do when you produce your shows? You want all the comics to mesh?
Yeah, that's why I call myself Curator of Vibes. First of all, I have many aliases, and I get that from Erykah Badu, right? At the beginning of her show, she'll give you like 7 different aliases.
Yeah.
So I have these different aliases, and some of them actually have different personas,
mm-hmm.
right? So I got Curator of Vibes. I got Ratchet Yogi. So when I'm trying to teach you something and, you know, be more spiritual or woke, Ratchet Yogi. I got Black Cupid. I'm gonna start doing. I've done like these dating things. I do or give dating advice. So these different personas, and so curator of vibes is important to me because that's what I mean. Like to be able to curate a show where it fits, especially because sometimes it's not just comedy I'm doing. Like I'll do a show with comedy, poetry, and a singer, but it'll flow and it don't feel like a talent show. It feels like a showcase that you know was put together purposely and feels right, like you're talking about.
Right. So let's get your timeline here kind of straight. So did you grew up in Sacramento, moved to where are you? Tell me your lifeline here.
Yes, I grew up in Sacramento. I'm from the Heights, man. So we in the Heights right now, if you don't know. But yeah, I'm from the Heights. Grew up here, lived here until I went to college. So in college, 18 years old.
So Grant High?
College I went to. No, my whole family went to Grant, but my mom didn't want me to go to Grant. So I went to Encina, which is in Arden, in the north, right?
Okay.
Not too far from here, right?
All right.
By the mall.
How'd you feel about that?
It was what it was because I had already went to the junior high that feeds into that. So my people were there anyway. I was kind of fine with that at that point.
Okay.
But yeah, like my whole dad's side, my mom, they all went to Grant. And so, yeah, I'm from North Sac and I went to college in Louisiana. So this California kid goes to Louisiana.
How'd you end up in Louisiana?
I got an academic scholarship.
Really?
Yeah, I got an academic scholarship. I'm kind of smart, you know what I'm saying? especially like Tuesday, Wednesday, today's Wednesday. So yeah, it was a program called You Can in the Heights, like right by Grant. Alan Rowe had a space there that he would send these California kids to these HBCUs. And it's dope because we don't realize in California, it's coveted. Like even Sacramento, like people from the outskirts come to Sacramento to hang out. We don't realize that there's so many kids that come from out of state to go to California. It fills up our schools. So sometimes black kids like me or underprivileged kids or whatever, we don't have the opportunity to go to those schools.
Okay.
So I wanted to go to USC. Maybe UCLA. That didn't work as well as me going to Grambling with the academic scholarship, and it was set up through that UCAM program.
So you wanted USC, you wanted UCLA, you wanted Grambling, dope, but what you got was Louisiana. Is that Louisiana State? Louisiana?
Grambling. Grambling's in Louisiana.
Oh, so you went to Grambling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Louisiana.
Yeah. The Grambling State University. One of the best HBCUs in the land.
Yeah, can you tell our listeners who aren't aware what HBCU stands for?
Historically Black College and University.
Right. And there's Grambling, there's Howard, there's
what? Yeah, Xavier, Jackson State, there's so many, AMU, there's so many. And they're mostly in the South, but there's actually one in SoCal. There's a few in on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually mentor kids. So we kind of give them a map of where all of the HBCUs are with our mentoring 100 Black Men Sacramento. So, you know, they're spread out. It's kind of cool.
Wow. And so did you finish at Grambling or did you start there and like finish somewhere else?
No, I finished there. Yep, I finished there.
What'd you study?
Management and marketing.
Okay.
Yeah, so I had double major, management and marketing. JTS School of Business, you know what I'm saying? Shout that out.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, man, learned so much stuff, but not only about, you know, my collegiate studies, but just about life and hustling and especially blackness. You know what I'm saying?
So you're going to Grambling what year? What years?
I started 03 to 08.
Okay. All right. You're a little bit younger than I thought you were. Okay.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it a culture shock or did you fit right in?
It was a little bit of both because it is a huge culture shock, first of all.
Do you think it would have been harder to go to Louisiana and not have gone to an all-black college?
Oh, yeah. Because that's what I was going to say. Because you don't fit in the culture of the South, but you do fit in with blackness. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like if you're from the diaspora, you fit in that way and you see that there's so many different people from Chicago, from the East Coast, Baltimore, whatever.
Right.
And they all come to Louisiana and we all have so many similarities and we all understand the same things, the same Martin references or whatever it's going to be. But we all have our own culture, whether it's footwork or juking or the Memphis juking. Like we all have our own little thing that we do.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, we were going dumb. So the kids from California would show them how we go dumb. The kids from Chicago would show us the footwork. You know what I'm saying? So in that way, it was a cultural experience that, like, I'm so grateful for.
Wow. Did you do, like, fraternity, or did you do any clubs while you were there?
I created my own, bro. My what? Own club called The Movement, bro. I've been cool for a while, man. I'm trying. I be trying to be humble now, but people don't understand, bro. Like, I do a little bit of something, a little bit of something. Uh-huh. No, so this is what happened.
Tell me about your club.
So this is what happened. I'm trying to make it short.
And why'd you start your own instead of joining one?
That's exactly where I got you. Because I'm trying to make it short and time to be long-winded. So, so when I was in college, there was a couple of dope fraternities I wanted to be in. I wanted to be an alpha, but there happened to be a situation with some guys in that organization that, you know, I just wasn't fond of.
Yeah.
The Omegas, I love them, but they sweat a lot. They jump around a lot. They just do a lot. I love their energy, but it just wasn't for me. And then we were going to be a Kappa. So the Kappa, that's when I, you know, was a pretty boy. I thought I was a pretty boy. And the Kappas are smooth dudes. But each one of those situations, there was something that would happen sometimes, like, interpersonally with that group of people that made it. So we didn't really want, when I say we, me and my roommate, we were kind of a, you know, a duo, dynamic duo. We didn't really vibe with that, with those people. So what we did is just created our own called The Movement. So when you see me, like, The Movement Solar, The Movement Entertainment, that's been there. So it was The Movement Social Service Organization. And it's basically just all the cool kids, and it was co-ed. So it wasn't a sorority fraternity, it was co-ed. It was just all the cool kids that would be doing things and have influence and were like-minded and wanted to bring a certain vibe to the school.
Right.
And we did that, man. We had ice cream socials where we talked about relevant things, like a forum, because you go to UC Davis and all, you have forums, right? You hear about these things. Our school, you know, it was dope with the culture, and it's like a fashion show, but we didn't have some of that stuff. Like, we didn't have the forums. We didn't clean up the campus. We didn't have little things that I saw at when I visited Davis, and I saw when I, you know, visited these different schools. So we brought that to the campus, man, and you know, fed people for free and had a barbecue, and we talked about different things on campus that we needed to work on. We cleaned up the campus. We did all kinds of cool stuff that some of the other organizations weren't really doing, and they couldn't do because some of them were suspended at different times.
Wow. Yeah. Did the movement continue after you guys left?
No, it's more like now, like, you know, if we see each other on Facebook at homecoming, we'll scream it, The Movement. Like, we will scream it. So it's more like a group of people that we have that memory from school, and we still try to, you know, vibe with each other if we ever see each other, you know.
Okay.
But we're from everywhere, man. Like, Kurt's from Seattle, L.A., you got Dominique, you got my man Josh from Florida. Like, literally, we're from everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so after college, it's about, what, 07, 08?
Yep.
Where do you go to after that? Is that when you end up in L.A.?
No, it's 08. I come back to Cali. I started, like, selling cars at Mel Rapton Honda.
Uh-huh. How was that? That's a tough gig.
Yeah.
It's either sink or swim, right? Selling cars, you're either doing great or doing horrible.
And it wasn't the worst thing because it was Honda is a cool brand. I always was lucky enough to sell cool brands. Like, I've sold Honda. I've sold HP for solar. I've sold Solar City, Tesla, Sunrun, SunPower. So all of these is just words for quality brands, mm-hmm. basically. And if they're not quality, at least they were big at the time and they were quality at the time.
Right.
They're not quality now. But so that made it a little easier because I wasn't selling like a random used car lot. I was selling in a nice facility, if you've ever been in there. It was a brand new facility when I got on. And then I had a lot of OG salesmen who taught me things. Like, my dad died when I was younger, so they taught me things like literally like collar stays, like to match my belt with my shoes, like little stuff that you wouldn't think about. I didn't learn that from older dudes in college,
right?
But when I went to work, we had to dress a certain way. We had to shave our beard, which I fucking hated. We had to shave our beard. It was real old school. And so there were some old school dudes that would really, you know, kind of tighten me up and teach me the ropes. So it wasn't a bad experience. Some of the management, I don't do good with whack ass authority. So eventually some of the management, you know.
Okay. When did you end up in LA?
Okay. So that happened 2017, 2018.
Oh, okay.
It was like a year and a half I went to L.A. Yes, I had a nice...
So that was recent?
Yeah, somewhat recent. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And that's when I actually started doing comedy. I never really did comedy before that officially. I would tell jokes when I was hosting. Mm-hmm. I would tell jokes in, when I was doing poetry. I would be a comedian, but it wasn't presented as a comedian. It was this poet dude that's super funny. Check him out.
Oh, okay.
So then I started in LA area, Ventura area, in Santa Barbara, Burbank. I started to go to comedy open mics, and so you're, you know, introduced as a comedian, and your job at that moment is to make people laugh, right?
Right.
And so that was the big thing for me, that expectation of laughter. To me, that's like a instant report card, where if they don't laugh, you know what I'm saying? Well, poetry is different. Dancing is different. People can be in awe and just be looking at you, because I used to dance too and I did poetry. And when I do poetry, sometimes a whole room is quiet. And
yeah.
And that's dope, because now they're all listening to me.
Yeah.
But if that happens,
but sometimes if that happens in comedy, that's a problem. No, but sometimes in comedy, like when you're getting from one joke to the other, you could have the whole room silent and like hanging on your every word. And that shit's dope.
That's fine, but at the same time, if they don't laugh when they're supposed to, or if they don't laugh enough, it's an instant report card.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
At the end of poetry, you sometimes don't know how well you did, and everyone doesn't know how well every single person did, right? Yeah. Somebody might think they did good, and they didn't.
So comics, regardless of how well your set goes, everyone tells you, good job, like, you're going to find something wrong with your set, right? Like, I could be like, I had a great set, but I messed this up. Do you do the same thing to yourself doing poetry?
You know what? I do that in general with compliments, and I need to stop. I need to take compliments better. I need to just say, like, thank you.
Yeah.
But when people say, oh, that was a dope show, or dope this, or dope lineup, and I go, oh, man, but I wanted to do this. I go, oh, but I could have did that.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, recalling some of the things I wanted to do better, instead of just taking in that positive energy.
Right.
And ingesting that as it is. So I try to do that a little bit more often. But yeah, man, I nitpick everything, bro.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If I sometimes I'll mess up in a small way and no one will notice. And that happens in comedy, that happens in poetry. And I've learned from dancing, the show must go on, or don't show them that you messed up. And
yeah.
Maybe no one's paying attention that you messed up. Don't make it a big blunder. So there was a lot of things that I learned in dance, and like that dance theater situation where we do these big productions, that then helped me in poetry. Then there was a lot of things I learned in poetry and just being on the mic all the time that helped me in comedy. And to me, each of those things are harder. Like, dance is easier because you're with a bunch of people and you're not talking. And then poetry is a little harder, but you don't gotta make people laugh, right?
Yeah.
And then comedy is the most difficult. So it kind of, each one prepared me for the next.
Wow. And you still kind of mess with all three of them, right?
I only dance for the ladies, bro. I'm out the game, man. That's, you know, it's funny. I'll use a little hips to impress girls that I like at a club. Like, if I have a girl or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah, if we go to a club, it's going to be a good night because we dancing, and, you know, girls love that kind of energy. So that's the only time I really dance. I'll do a little dancing on my comedies.
I've
set.
Seen you,
You've
yeah.
Seen it,
yeah
so
I've
I do
seen
a little
it,
bit
yeah.
of that.
I've seen that.
But not too much, you know.
Where did this positivity, this sense of community, where did it come from? Was it your mom? Was it your dad? Was it your grandma? Where did that come from? Not everybody wants to help as much as you seem to be.
I don't know, man. It's more like the talented 10th, more like Spider-Man corny shit, right? Like, with great power, blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
So they have this thing called the talented 10th, where, like, the most talented 10% is supposed to, like, help everyone else.
Okay.
Right?
Where'd you learn that?
So, I don't even remember, man.
Uh-huh.
It's one of those things you just know, and then it sticks with you, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember who first said it to me, but I've heard it many different places. And then, of course, the Spider-Man, everyone knows that.
Yeah.
So I've been helping other people for a very long time. I used to teach my math class in high school.
Really?
Because my math teacher was this white dude who didn't really relate to the kids. And then what would happen is, I don't like doing like bullshit work. There's a better word for it, I can't think of it right now. But I don't like doing that kind of work, so I'm not a big homework kind of dude, whatever. So if my friends would need help in class, I would just help them and I wouldn't do my work.
Mm-hmm.
But then my teacher was smart enough to actually see this and take advantage of this. And so he knows if I can teach the kids, then I know that the idea, right? I know the concept. Right. So he would literally let me teach the kids, and he would leave sometimes, bro. Like, leave the room.
Make it easier for him. Yeah.
And I'm in 10th grade, 11th grade. I'm the teacher. I'm standing at the board, bro. No exaggeration. He would leave the room. He would take a nap. He would play solitaire.
So was it at that point that you, like, because you're teaching, you're in front of the room. Is it at that point that you start performing, that you're, like, I'm a performer?
I was already performing.
When did you start performing?
I started performing in third grade. I started dancing. Well, we're black, so if you're talented at all, you got to perform at Thanksgiving. You got to perform in the living room.
Eddie Murphy, Delirious or Raw, that he's telling jokes in front of the family?
I saw that at the Crest Theater, row with Brittany. Shout out to Brittany. It's her birthday tomorrow.
Delirious at the Crest Theater?
Yeah, I like to do cutesy shit like that. We do little dates and shit, little smoothie dates with different people. But yeah, it was playing at the Crest, so we went. It was dope.
Was that one? But that's when it was initial run, right? It never got a re-release, did it?
No, they literally play old movies at the Crest, my man. I seen this like a year ago, two years ago.
Oh, really? They should have? Okay, yeah, because I've gone to the Crest. Like, I've seen like the Warriors at the Crest. I've seen the Outsiders at the Crest.
Exactly, like that. Yeah, just like that.
Oh, man, I missed that one. Mm-hmm. I try to keep up with those.
Yeah. So the last time I seen that Eddie Murphy scene was at the Crest, and that's exactly how it is for a black family. Like, do this dance, do this, whatever. But in third grade, the showbiz kids, shout out to Sydney Twilla. Shout out Sid and the whole family, the whole Twilla family. They would go. And my life is like a stereotypical black person movie. And I realize this, and I laugh, and I laugh, and I laugh.
Uh-huh.
Like, bro, like, my dad died, like, the first scene in Paid in Full. It was similar to that, which is sad, but whatever. Paid in Full is my favorite movie. And then you know how you have like the like Dangerous Minds, you have like the white woman come in to the black kids and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Literally, showbiz kids would come to the hood, to the Heights, these white people teaching us hip hop dance. And I just realized that like later in life. But yeah, that's what happened, bro. I started dancing, and the best kids from each school, they would ask to come and be a part of the company. And so that means now we're dancing at like festivals, wherever you see kids dance right now, like at a festival or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Like, we were dancing on the big stage at the fair.
Wow.
That was one of the first times I got nervous, and I was like working out, had to take my shirt off. And that was the first time I was like conscious of hella people are about to see me perform. And I was like one of the main people in that dance. So that's one of the first times I felt like that. I felt like that a couple times since then, but yeah, that's where the performance came from, ever since third grade. And then it just got bigger and bigger. We started dancing for the Kings, the Monarchs, which no longer exist. That's WNBA.
I wish they'd bring them back.
Right. They were good. And then the Knights, we had before we had our soccer team. Now we had an indoor soccer team called the Knights, and they were fire. They won a championship, just like the Monarchs won a championship.
Mm-hmm.
So we would dance in Arco Arena, bro. And I've had like different lives, bro. I had like a dance life, and then a poet life, and now I'm on my comedy life. And yeah, it's been wild.
When did you start doing poetry, or what got you into poetry?
Girls. Oh. Nah, it's I started doing poetry, first of all, Deaf Poetry Jam was like an inspiration. Yeah. So I wrote a poem for this girl named Monica. Shout out to Monica. And I just wrote the poem randomly, and I liked it. And I put it in my room. I thought it was fire. But Deaf Poetry got me just thinking like that. And then, we would all want to rap. I never wanted to be a rapper, but I would always want to rap. Like, I would rap at lunchtime. I would battle people. I would win a lot of times. People would stop battling me. I would watch 8 Mile, like shit like that. But I never wanted to be a rapper, but I would love to rap. So then
that's interesting that you enjoyed all the other aspects of performing and everything that kind of goes around rap, but you never got into it.
Well, like, I've literally rapped before on stage in front of very many people, right? Mm-hmm. But I never wanted to be a rapper.
Okay, I get it. Yeah.
I like to rap. I even like to freestyle. Like, in college, I would freestyle a lot. I want to impress people. So I'd freestyle and it'd be dope, and it was what it was. So, so the poetry thing was, I saw this dude named Harold Green. Shout out to Harold Green. And I wonder if Harold Green understands how many times I say his name, because every time I tell a story like this, I have to like tell the story, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He killed this show. It was an open mic, and he killed it. And he's a freshman in college. I'm a freshman in college. And I have this thing where, like, if you're my age or you're similar to me and you do something, then I'm going to do it. Like, if I see a little girl on a roller coaster that's hella scary, like, I'm not going to be afraid of that.
Right.
Not saying I'm going to do it like I'm a follower, but saying like I'm not going to be afraid of it.
Right, right.
So I saw this dude, he's killing it. I was like, I can kill that. I could do that.
Yeah.
And so I tried and it worked. It was a very positive feedback. It was about my kid. I wrote a poem about my kid. And yeah, ever since then, bro, you know, you like the feeling and then you keep doing it.
So now you say you still kind of dabble in poetry and comedy.
Yeah, I host a poetry open mic right now. We might bring another one to Florence Square. I don't do it as much just because my poetry home no longer exists weekly. We used to do Mahogany Poetry. It's one of the longest running open mics. But yeah, I hosted that and I just got a gig. I was telling you at Folsom College. So I still do poetry. I don't actively do it as much. And so people don't book me as much for it, but people still do book me and I still do it when it makes sense to do it.
So is there a poetry scene in Sacramento and has it been for a long time? And is there like a black poetry scene, like a white poetry scene? Is there a Latino? Is all that going on in Sacramento?
I don't know too much about the Latino scene. They're hiding from me if there is one. I love Latino people. Hit me up. But yeah, there's definitely a black and a white, or what I would call... I would call more urban poetry and more literary poetry.
Okay, gotcha. That's how
some people would call it like slam poetry, urban poetry, where that is more, it's about the words you say and it's about wordplay as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about what you're talking about. Like we're talking about real shit.
Yeah.
In some of these poetry shows and open mics. And shit that needs to be heard or shit that needs to be vented.
To me, like slam poetry was always about like a movement, like what's like calling out a wrong in society. Like it seemed to have like, it wasn't like, there's like poetry that's like, you know, like love poetry and like the stuff like that. But to me, like slam poetry always seemed to have it was an anger.
And now it's not. So slam is an actual competition. So to win the competition, everyone can't be angry. Some people want to be funny. Some people want to be romantic. So I get what you're saying, where that type of poetry had an anger to it. But when I say slam, it's more of the like urban performative type of poetry where this is supposed to like move you or entertain you.
Mm-hmm.
I might be moving around and painting pictures, where literary poetry, like at Luna's, is where my old white people be. And I go to both because I want to be able to dabble in both and be, you know, multifaceted. So that's more like they might be talking just about, not about revolution, but like about going fishing with their dog.
Right.
The whole
right.
poem, they're just talking about going fishing with their dog. But the way they're doing it, they might be using literary devices. It might be a haiku or this or that. And they might be using iambic, you know, all the shit. So that is the difference sometimes, where you have literary poems where you'll read, they'll say, hey, I'm going to a poetry reading, and you'll have that in a book and you'll study that, and then literary poetry that's meant to be heard, that I spit poetry today.
So like at a poetry reading, would they also like be reading other people's works, that they just want to read that work, or are they performing their own works?
Sometimes.
So when you perform, it's always your stuff that you've written.
You know what? Like I said, because I go to those places,
I have
that influence. So I started to pay homage to Oscar Brown Jr., who's an amazing poet, rest in peace, from Chicago. And he does this poem, Apologize. So I've memorized Apologize. And not only do I try to memorize it, but I try to perform it like him. Like I try to bring his performance mm-hmm. to wherever I'm at. You know what I'm saying? And give them that performance that I saw on Deaf Poetry Jam that I loved. So I do that sometimes, usually just with him, or maybe one other thing. But yeah, it was one kind of an influence from literary poets who will get up and maybe do two of their poems and then do a Maya Angelou poem and just read that because that's how they're feeling that day.
Mm-hmm. I dabble in comedy almost every day, where like if I'm not going to an open mic, I'm thinking about my set and how I can move stuff around, or I'm jotting down an idea. Like there's not a day that goes by that I don't somehow engage in comedy. What does your brain do on a daily basis? Is it thinking like a comic or is it thinking like a poet?
It's not thinking like neither now. Like that's
really
that's what's funny. So with poetry, it was not always like thinking like a poet, but I would have inspiration, like usually like when a new song or a new album or something. I usually write poetry to music. The poetry that I don't write to music, it feels like I didn't. It feels completely different. It's like literary. Like I was just explaining, I have poems that I don't even memorize. I just read them because they're meant to be read.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote them like that. And they're like short stories and things like that. And I sometimes share them on Facebook. But yeah, so I used to think like a poet more when I had new music or had something to say, or when I was commissioned to do a piece, I would get in that zone. Now, comedy, if I say something that I think is hilarious or I think is clever, because sometimes it could be hilarious or clever, either one. Like clever shit feels good to hear. So I will record that on my phone and then play with it later. I don't really write like I do poetry. And to me, I think I'm being lazy with comedy because I write my poetry and rewrite it and remember it and say it in the shower and make sure it's perfect. But comedy, I don't do that. So I feel
really
like,
that's
I feel
interesting.
Like I'm barely trying, you know what I'm saying?
But poetry is your first love, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting that you take that different approach.
And because the way I look at comedy is completely different. When I first started poetry, I was like competitive and I wanted to be the best and I wanted to impress all these, you know, good poets. Now, with comedy, I'm a little competitive and I want dope people to think I'm dope, but I don't have that same. I've been in the grind of performing for so many years that it's hard to like act like I'm a new performer in this new space. Like, oh, look, I'm fresh and raw and I'm ready to go to the open mic and stay here for 2.5 hours like we were talking about.
Yeah, you don't have that you have something to prove mentality.
Yeah.
With comedy, because you've performed on all kinds of stages
exactly.
already and not
exactly.
just comedy. That's so great. That's so great.
But then it takes away.
I
think it takes away. I see other people, bro, that are hungry, and I think I'm funnier than a lot of people. But I see people who put more effort into it, who get more back from it. So I always think about that. I give myself an excuse and say, okay, well, my kid is after he's graduated and all that. I need to go a little harder. Blah blah blah. But yeah, I do. I do think it has different effects, because one, I'm not thirsty and I'm not cutthroat, I'm not an asshole. I try to be cool to other comics. I try to be humble. I will go to any place and do comedy. You've seen me do comedy at random places,
mm-hmm.
where sometimes there's people who are on my level or larger, they don't go to those places.
Yeah.
And they don't hang out with the, you know, the newbies or whoever, mm-hmm. where I just try to do whatever I can to like build a following, because when people see me do my thing, they rock with me.
So what brought you back to Sacramento from LA? Did you just get burned out on LA?
Blackness. And I was in Ventura. I did comedy in LA. I did comedy in all those places, but I lived in Ventura, and that's very important because there's black people in LA and there's no black people in Ventura.
Ventura's a different vibe. It's a beach town.
Yeah, but there's not even like Mexican Americans. There's like Mexicans.
Yeah, there's Ventura and Oxnard, a lot of field workers, right? They're working, they're picking strawberries and they're doing all that stuff.
And white people, and then Oxnard and Camarillo's, you know, prominent white people in Santa Barbara. But it just wasn't like we play a game to try to count how many black people we see in a day. And so when you come from, like, I was a host of Mahogany Urban Poetry,
mm-hmm.
and I'm 100 black men of Sacramento. I'm a member. I went to a HBCU and I lived in Louisiana for five years.
Yeah, so when you say blackness,
right?
Yeah,
it was basically blackness. So me and the lady I was talking to, kind of, you know, it was time to move on, and so I came back here, and that was that.
Nice. And so you're back here like 2018, 2019.
Yep.
And back in the same neighborhood you grew up. You and I were on a show last summer together at what was that, like Lil Joe's here?
Yes.
In Sacramento. And that's when I had seen you around and I of course paid attention, but like that night you did like 30 minutes like in front of like eight people.
Right. That's always so difficult for me to think about doing.
Well, it was difficult for everybody.
Yeah.
It was hard. And but like you drew everyone in, and then that's when I really realized that like this was your neighborhood growing up, and this is still your neighborhood now. We're talking about Del Paso Heights, right?
Yeah. Heights up.
Yeah.
Yeah, my grandma used to take me to that place, Little Joe's. I remember it. My granny used to take me there. RIP granny. But yeah, man, we were from the Heights, we're from the north. My great grandpa, her father, built the home we used to live in on Nogales. He built that.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, so what year did your great grandparents, do you know when they landed here?
I don't even know, man. I need to like get more info and put together like a tree and all that. We're right. doing that for the other side of my family right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need to do that for my mom's side, but I don't really know. I just know they came from, first from Jersey and then from Long Beach.
Okay.
So from Jersey to Long Beach and then Long Beach to, and so yeah, built a house up here. And
there was a big migration to Long Beach like in the early, was that like the 50s and 60s?
Yeah, that's why I'm a Lakers fan. People be hating on me, but my great grandpa was a Lakers fan. My mom, like my family, was Lakers fans. Like the pictures we have of him, he's in a Lakers jumpsuit, head to toe. So that's one of the main reasons I'm a Lakers fan.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I used to be a Kings fan as well, mm-hmm. but then there was a rivalry, so I had,
they
to
had
only
to pick a side.
I used to literally dance for the Kings and throw and wear Kings jerseys and be in Arco Arena like. High five Chris Webber and all the shit. So
yeah,
then you know I had to choose my side once the sides were
yeah,
drawn.
Yeah, right? So what's your impression of so I moved into this neighborhood 2016 2017,
mm-hmm.
and I've just seen this part of the boulevard grow and grow and grow. What's your impression of the neighborhood right now, and how like how you see like the direction it's going in? Do you like it? Are you excited?
Yeah, I think a lot of spots are seeing little upgrades. And I think there's a lot of spaces where you're like, oh, there used to be nothing there, and now there's a center for this or center for that.
Right.
So I like it, man. It's funny because in a city, different places have, you know, change the culture of that neighborhood. So Arden used to be really bougie, and now it's kind of hood, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, wow.
Kind of at least not hood, but like not as affluent.
Uh-huh.
So you know, I would love to see the Heights become more affluent and you know have more, you know, grocery stores and this, that, and a third. Sometimes it's systematic, sometimes it's cultural. So
right, do you worry about like gentrification?
I think slowly, but that's the thing, certain places have such a reputation that I don't see a lot of people taking a stronghold in that space like they did at certain parts of Oak Park.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah,
you see them
yeah.
doing that, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's their space right now. I think all their spaces near Doco downtown, I think Midtown, I think yeah. that's kind of their flavor now. And
but I also see like when you look at the businesses coming into the neighborhood, they kind of cater to an urban population, right? There's like new bakeries, which is like, and there's new like the barbecue joint, and even like the brewery, they kind of cater more to like an urban crowd. They're not really catering to like an upscale. Well, I'm not saying that urban isn't upscale, but it's not bougie, right?
Yeah, right,
right,
yeah, exactly. You got the barbecue spot, the you know what Kong is it? What's it called?
King Kong Brewery.
King Kong, yeah, stuff like that. It's nice in there,
mm-hmm.
but I don't feel out of place when I go. So, you know,
exactly.
I feel like everybody's welcome. But that's the thing, man. I'm from the hood, and I've seen so many hoods that it's all about the people. It's all about the people. I would love to see people treating each other well because they're from the same neighborhood, coming together and building because they're from the same neighborhood. We're a lot more disconnected from like our neighbors and from our neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and that's how you really become safe and become, you know, like a cultural hub, somewhere you could like go to the park and have these festivals. Man, back in the day in the Heights, we had this huge water war with Super Soakers.
Uh-huh.
And I remember it was one of the greatest memories of my childhood, bro.
It
was
really?
Like it was like right off of Grand. It was amazing. Like everyone who had a water gun was out there getting it in. It was amazing. So I try to bring that back. So every year I do a water war where I get a bunch of Super Soakers and things, and the kids come to the park. We give them free food. We have music, all the stuff. We play games, give them gift cards, and they, you know, they have a bunch of fun with water balls and water guns and. So that's the kind of community and culture that I want to see.
That sounds like so much fun, but that at the same time sounds like so much work. like putting
bro, on something I like that. Bro, I touch every table on those days. on those Water Wars, I'm getting the stuff from Soul Collective. Shout out Soul Collective. They're one of my biggest partners and sponsors. I love them, Stella and Anand. And but they did Soul Collective, you know, I love them, but they do not come bring that shit. They don't bring it to me. They say, hey, Rud, they trust me. They love me. So I go into Soul Collective. I get the stuff. I pack it up in the car or the SUV. And me and my son, you know, we put out all those tents. I touch everything that, you know, I go to Target. I get all the supplies. Even though there are people who donate, shout out to 100 Black Men in Sacramento. Shout out to...
can you tell me a little bit about that? You've mentioned them twice. And I'm to me, it's just a name. I don't understand what that organization is. What is that? 100 Black Men of Sacramento. Is it really 100 men?
is it really like, it started as
like one passed away and you're going to let one in?
Yeah, right. We should do that. That would be dope. Yeah. Like
you trace
one of
them, like you trace someone's DNA, yeah, like, right. Oh, we're sorry.
You're the next one up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's 100 Black Men of America is like the root foundation, and it was founded a while ago by some of these prominent black athletes and thinkers of the time. Mm-hmm. So that was on the East Coast, but then they have you know, different or branches in different places. So there's 100 Black Men of a Bay Area chapter, Sacramento chapter, so on and so forth. So we're just a part of this whole national thing, and the basis of it is mentoring. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do other things as well, you know, fraternity and whatnot. But the basis of it is mentoring. So we mentor these kids, and we teach them general goal setting kind of things, general mentoring kind of life skills.
Do you go into the schools, or do you go into the after school programs?
They come to us. So on the weekends. So I get up on Saturdays. Oh, my God. Nah, it's cool. It's cool. I get up on Saturdays. And we used to do it every Saturday. Now it's like every other Saturday. And we'll go to one of the schools in Natomas. Right now it's Natomas High.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we teach them these things. We have a music program, Flip. My man Flip does Mink music instruments in kids' hands. So he literally had them learning how to make beats. And these kids literally make beats, bro. And the beats are not trash. Like, they make beats, they save them to their phone. And so we got 6th graders, 7th graders, 8th graders, all the way, you know, up to seniors. We don't have too many right now. But the kids that are 7th and 8th right now are making beats. So the time that they're older, they're going to be nice, because the shit's already kind of grooving right now, because they've been with us for a few years.
Wow.
And then we have robotics. So I'm the head of the robotics, or was the head of robotics when I have more time. And so we set up a robotics team. So we had the first black robotics team in this area, because there was just not a lot of black kids there, bro. It's like 130 kids, and none of them are black.
Mm-hmm.
So we teach them. It's Lego League Robotics. Super dope. Different levels of it. And yeah, so we teach them robotics. We teach them music, general life skills.
Jeez.
Yeah.
What's something that you haven't done for kids, the neighborhood, that you hope that you'll be able to do?
I just want everything to be bigger, you know, maybe have a scholarship. So 100 Black Men has given scholarships. We give a couple hundred dollars to some of our kids who went to college. To have my own scholarship would be dope.
That would be dope.
And the only thing I think I want to do everything bigger, obviously, more effective. But I want to bring people together, like like Black Cupid. I want to have these like speed dating comedy kind of events, play minute to win it games, a whole little event where you can meet people. Because it'd be so dope if I had this annual Black Cupid thing. And not only did someone fall in love because of that, but then they can come back, because it's for couples too. So it's for,
right,
it would be for new couples that are trying to meet people, but established couples too, because they can also play the minute to win it games and win the big prizes. So whether you speed date and you find a new partner and you play the games, or you bring your girl.
Right.
It'll be this, you know, yearly thing. And we started it, but I need to find a venue. I start this shit a lot of times, and then I do so much that I need to stay consistent. I want to stay consistent, and I want to finish a lot of these ideas, bring them to fruition on a consistent basis.
Right.
Man, yeah, that's the only thing.
You do a lot of stuff, dude. You do a lot of stuff. Let's talk real quick about the open mic that you run, and the show that you're running now too. Well, so you're running an open mic and a show right now, right? Or you're not doing the show yet?
Well, the show is this Saturday, the first one at the Digital Cafe. So that's called Pure Funny, and I do that. It's Russell Cummings Comedy in collaboration with Shaw Dog.
Where's Comedy, the Digital Cafe?
That's Nate Shaw. And the Digital Cafe is at Florence Square. So it's this brand new venue that's really dope in there. It's where they have the African Marketplace, where they have a bunch of the Sacramento Black events.
So that's like South Sac, Florence Square?
Yep. Okay. Right off of Florence, right, where the McDonald's is. So if you've never been to like the Black Food Fest, oh, you got to go.
I don't know anything about it.
Summertime, you got to go. I'll tell you about it. I've hosted it before. I think I'm hosting one of those things. Barry Axios does a lot of dope things over there. So if y'all don't, you just follow him, Barry Axios, and you're going to be really tuned in. They have ribs. They have the best ribs, bro. They have the best brisket. They have, it's the Black Food Fest, bro. So it's just all food.
Yeah.
I mean, there's entertainment, but there's hella food vendors.
Yeah.
You have a little bit of everything. Take some home.
So the show is going to be a monthly?
Yeah, I'm over here talking about the food fest.
Yeah, we brought up food.
We got excited. Actually, the show is monthly, maybe semi-monthly, maybe once every other month, because I don't want to, one, have that always hanging over our head, but more importantly, people get tired of it, so I do things in season. So you might see.
I think semi-monthly is the way to go. Every other month, I think, is the way to go.
Yeah.
For to avoid burnout from yourself,
yeah,
and to keep people from, like, kind of, oh, there'll be another one next month.
Exactly. I don't want that. But I do have a partner too. So he's going to host every other one.
Is that Nate Shaw? So you just mentioned?
Yeah. Nate Shaw, man. We've been working well together. He's super dope dude. So that is Florence Square. I think it's 2245 Florence Square. It's inside the Digital Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
So it just really looks nice. It's Black owned. We set it up where we're going to sell out this show. Like, it's what, Wednesday? And the Saturday show is basically sold out right now. We're trying to change the configuration so we can fit more people. But
Nice. And is this strictly comedy, or is it like how you were talking about, like a little bit of dance, a little bit of poetry, a little bit of comedy?
This is like my normal comedy show format, which is where I love Richard Pryor. I think Richard Pryor is the GOAT. So I love Richard Pryor, Bernie Mac. But I love old comedy, new comedy. I've ingested a lot of it. So one of my favorite specials is Live from the Sunset Strip, where he brings out Patti LaBelle. You don't see her in the recording.
I didn't know that happened.
But he shouts her out, and you can feel the energy, and everybody goes crazy when he shouts her out.
Uh-huh.
She had just came up.
Oh.
And so that's an inspiration to me. So I always have like a singer. So this month we're going to have Diamond Key. I love Diamond. So sometimes I have a singer or a rapper. Diamond is super, super dope. So at the beginning, where people are coming in and they're getting their food and their drinks or whatnot, Diamond will do a set, 20 minutes or so, kill it, get the vibe right, and then we'll start the comedy. And
shout out to Richard Pryor.
So we comics. Got, oh man, we got Mario Hodge.
Oh,
we got,
wow,
Jay Rich.
Oh,
we got
shit.
Cookie Williams. We got me, you know what I'm saying? And we got Nate.
So the Bay is well represented at this show.
Yeah, I like to switch it up. I like to do things that people, my crowd, hasn't seen. And it's been a couple of years, year and a half, since I have both of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they're heavy hitters. So
they
I like
are.
To do
yeah.
what I call like double headliners, double features, where on a normal local show, only one of them would be on the show and they would headline.
Mm-hmm.
Usually. I mean, they've done shows together, but to have it stacked the way I have it stacked, I like to do shows where there's not a lot of comics. So there's a lot of shows you see that I'm not on because I don't appreciate it. Some people do shows just because they have the opportunity, but I am blessed enough to be able to make my own opportunity, like you said. So sometimes I try not to be as thirsty for stage time.
Yeah.
So if you have a show with 10 comics and you always have shows with 10 comics and they always go late, or you don't pay the comics and stuff like that, that to me is not a good foundation for not only for your show, but for everyone.
For comedy in general.
People don't realize that everyone doesn't love what they love.
Yeah,
it's so weird. Like, no matter what, we're talking about dentistry to comedy to whatever, to the Niners, there's some people that don't give a fuck about the 49ers at all, or football. They think it's stupid.
Yeah
right. So there's also people that don't care about comedy. So if you have this long ass drawn out show, or you have this weak ass show you put all your friends on, and some random comes, they may not go to another comedy show anytime soon because
they're gonna think it's all
like yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. I see comedy shows all the time where people leave before the headliner comes on. Think about that. You pay the headliner the most.
I was just at a show like that.
You obviously want people to hear the headliner because you give them the most stage time. And yo dumbass got guest sets and stupid shit because you're trying to get booked. People do tit for tat booking. So I'm going to give you a guest set so you can get on my show and I can get on your show.
I'm so sick of
and
that.
And now your dumbass got half of your crowd left before your headliner came on.
Yeah.
And what
yeah.
if your headliner has merch?
Yeah, and the host that does like 5 minutes in between every comic.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I do that too. So people talk about that, but I only have 4 comics.
But you only have 4, yeah.
And sometimes the show is called Russell Cummings Comedy, or sometimes the show pictures my face. So there's hella my people that come to my shows. Like I have fans. I appreciate them, or family, or friends, or whoever right. the fuck they are. But they want, there's so many times where people say, oh, why don't you do more, why don't you do a set, and I'm acting like Charles Barkley. I need to finish my sentences. They want to see me perform. There's so many times that has happened where they're like, oh, why don't you do a set? They don't realize I did 5 minutes 4 times. That's 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But because I didn't get up there and talk for 20 minutes in front of them, it feels like the other people did more time. So you can have all these dope ass comics. Some my crowd wants to see me. So it's funny where people just think they're, you know, hot shit, when you know my crowd shows me love, bro. They show me love, awesome. And that's I appreciate awesome. Them
so
for that.
So first one's this Saturday. It's going to sell out. Looks like it's going to sell out.
Yep, sold out. Next one's May 4th. So by time this, I don't know when it's going to drop, but May 4th, Pure Funny. Tickets will be on Eventbrite. Shout out to Nate Shaw, man. Shaw Dog Comedy. Russell
That'll
Cummings
also
Comedy.
Be at the Digital Cafe.
Digital Cafe inside the Florin Square, 2245 Florin, right by the McDonald's.
All right. This will probably drop next week. I keep them about a week. So
oh, perfect.
Yeah, it'll be out by then. That's awesome, man. Russell, I knew this was going to be an interesting conversation, but it was like, man, you do so much. That's awesome.
It's a little razzle dazzle. That's my guy in college. Shout out to Nick, man. My guy in college used to always say that. It was a little razzle dazzle. So one of my managers called me razzle dazzle because I would say that all the time. Whenever someone would give me a compliment, I'd say, yeah, just a little razzle dazzle.
Right on. Let's. I like to wrap up the podcast with a little segment called 5 Easy Questions, and I promise that they're easy. Well, I don't know. You might not be because you got a lot going on. But are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Question number one: who or what inspires you?
For comedy, Richard Pryor, Bernie Mac, Red Fox, all the greats, especially guys like Jamie Foxx that are multi-talented.
Yeah.
For the world. Just great people, man. Just great people who have done a lot to make the world better. That's super inspirational to me. I watch a lot of like documentaries and old historian things. And yeah.
Okay. Question number two. What are you currently binging? And it's not necessarily like what TV show are you binging, but like what are you just can't, you're just consuming it all right now. Like you can't get enough of this. What are you currently binging?
Positive Vibes, Kanye, Sunday Service, The Rain Down. Oh man, I've been listening to that and just trying to binge Positive Vibes and remember who I am. So I literally have spent time with people from my past, you know, from times I was very confident, and friends that I need to reconnect with to get that feeling back. Right. And then literally what I was just binging is I saw the show Beef. I usually don't do shows.
Oh, that show
like
was
a,
intense.
It's like a, yeah. So I binged that literally like just just a week ago. I liked it. I loved it. I'm petty like that. So. So I saw myself with those characters.
See, I'm not. I mean, I'm petty, but like I was like, this is too far. Like,
yeah, they took it way too far. But King of Petty is one of my monikers. Remember, I told you I have a few of them. Yeah. King of Petty is one of them.
All right. Oh, let me, because I wrote that down. Did you see Erykah Badu when she came to Sacramento recently?
I didn't see her that time. I saw Erykah Badu randomly in Kentucky. Amazing show. Amazing show in Kentucky. Like I literally flew like out there with a friend just to see Erykah Badu. It was so randomly. Dope.
Okay. All right. I partied so much in the 90s that I knew I had seen Erykah Badu, but I couldn't remember where.
Right.
I had seen Erykah Badu, and I finally realized that it was on one of the Smoking Groups tours. Like it was like Erykah Badu, the Fugees, Tribe Called Quest. I don't remember, but that's where I saw her, and I did get a chance to see her this last time.
Shout out to Erykah Badu just because, right? We've said her name like 8 times, but hopefully she, because of this
and
podcast, we both meet her
mood.
Soon.
Yeah, she, you know, I think I have her. And this stack of records right here is like my early morning easy listening stuff. I think she's in that stack right there. I'm not sure.
And as a person, she's funny and clever and creative, and I like that.
Yep. What are you afraid of? Question number three. What are you afraid of?
What am I afraid of? Man, I'm afraid of random things like I'm claustrophobic.
Okay.
Right? So I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid of random things. Like, you know, this is funny. I used to be afraid of like being an activist and then like getting tortured or something, or getting like killed or something because I was doing positive shit.
Yeah.
Like, and that happens. Like the fucking Black Lives Matter dudes, like they have, a couple of them have died. Really? And they're like, oh, it's a robbery, but like nothing's really taken. Like one dude like died in his car.
Uh-huh.
And that whistleblower just now, I don't know what happened, but like motherfuckers be dying so
randomly.
That's when I think I'm just like, you know, get popular enough to say some shit and make someone mad. But yeah, isn't that it's a random fear, like, because I want to save the people, but I think they're gonna get me.
I mean, traditionally
they get me.
It's happened. Yeah, yes. It's not like it's never happened. Right. Okay.
Historically.
All right, question number four. If you're on death row, what's your last meal request?
Oh shit, there was this dude that ordered hella shit. So because I know that, because I'll read hella like random articles, you know, they'll be like, oh, top 25 crazy of death row meals. Like maybe 2 months ago I clicked on that, so so I'm prepared for this question. Probably some cheesecake in there with some Oreos.
Is that a particular cheesecake?
Something Oreo cheesecake. Either Oreo cheesecake itself or just the plain cheesecake that has a little lemon to it.
Uh-huh.
You know, with that little lemon zest. Right. So it has a little lemony. It doesn't have to be super lemony, but just that, just enough.
That tart.
People know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
So that good old-fashioned cheesecake with some Oreos would be the dessert. The meal would have to be maybe a bacon burger one last time, but maybe with some ribs, some macaroni and cheese.
Well, like a bacon brisket burger.
No, a bacon burger by itself and ribs, because I know you can order multiple things. Okay. That's what I'm trying to say. This dude taught
me. I was trying to
the game, just in case.
I was trying to condense it. Yeah.
No, just in case I'm in the situation. I know the rules. No, yeah. Fuck them. You know what I'm saying? It's not a huge expense. You know what I'm saying? It's one time. So yeah, ribs. Probably a good bacon burger. You gotta get the mac and cheese in there and some yams, a little bit of marshmallows.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm going with that.
All right. That sounds amazing.
Arnold Palmer to wash it down. Sweet tea, not regular tea.
Sweet. It's gotta be sweet.
Always.
Yeah.
That's why I love the South too. Shout out to the South just for the fact that everywhere you go they have sweet tea, bro. It's an option.
Sick.
Love it.
Last question, man. We probably touched on this, but what's next for you, man? What's next? What's your next endeavor? What's your next project?
Oh man, it's pure funny. It is the Water Wars coming up this summer. I want to bring back Real Men Talk. So these are different aspects of myself, and I've literally made different monikers.
What was Real Men Talk? I feel like I saw something of that about that. Has that been gone for a while?
Yeah, it's something where I brought up like right before Rona and through Rona, and I need to bring it back. Where we just get together and fraternize, man. Like there was a expert that would teach you something for 30 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. And then we'd ask them questions, we'd learn whatever, and that's the first hour. So we literally learned like nutrition or meditation or yoga. We just learned something from a local expert. And then we would eat for free. And then the second part of it, we would just talk, have a forum, kind of like I did in college. We would give people the ability to like write different things they were thinking or answer a question, like what are you going to do for the new year?
Mm-hmm.
And off of that, we would just kind of talk and vibe out, man. So it's just really what it talks about. I think really what it sounds like, Real Men Talk. I think some people think it was more of like a kumbaya and we're chanting but it's not. It was just guys fraternizing, coming together.
Just men talking.
And yeah, and that's hella helpful. It's more helpful than you would think.
Nice, nice. And is that open up to like all ages of men, or is it like?
Yeah, someone brought their kid. As long as you have if it's a younger person, we want them to have their parent or their parents, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, someone brought their kid before, it don't matter. We talking.
All right.
And learning.
Russell, where can folks find you on social media? Are you a Facebooker? Are you an Instagrammer?
I do a little Instagram and Facebook. I don't really like social media a lot. I never had a MySpace. I just got Facebook because I was graduating college, and I thought that after I graduated, I wouldn't be able to get it anymore. So I was like, let me just get it just in case. Because back in the day, you had to have an EDU.
Yeah.
Yes, you had to have an .edu. So I got it with my EDU, and Yeah, but long story short, Russell Cummings and Russell Cummings 8 on Instagram. So Russell Cummings. And people make fun of me like I got an AOL. There's like an AOL name, Russell Cummings 8. 8's my favorite number. Infinity, Kobe, very plain. Russell mm-hmm. Cummings 8.
Russell, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, man.
No, it's been a long time coming. And sorry it took me so long to get you on. But I'm so glad you came here today. And I'm sure we're going to run into each other down the road sooner or later.
Yes, sir. Jesse will be on Pure Funny soon, so check him out. I'm sorry that it took me a while to book you as well, but my stints, like I said, is 6 months here, 6 months there. I'm spread out.
Yeah.
I want to focus on...
You gave me your card that night. I probably still have it right here somewhere. I'm sure I do, because I don't throw anything away.
But I want to focus on getting good people out, spreading the love.
Dude, that you know lineup that you have for this... Okay, look, I'm not gonna front. A lot of times I'll look at lineups and I'll be like, I could be on that show. But like when you said the lineup that you just said, I'm like, all right.
I like to mix them up too, bro. Like you said, I don't like to have solid. Only guys or only black people or only this or only that or only one type of comedy. So I really like to mix it up. So yeah, Jesse coming soon, man.
That lineup is fired. Matt, Russell, thanks for coming out today. And I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. My man. Follow the man. Appreciate he's doing you. Good things.
All right.